My name is Karen Bloomquist, and this is the fourth of a week-long series that I've been doing in the village. The overall series is Work, Justice, and the Church. And this evening's session is Women's Work, question mark, with work in quotation marks. And one of the reasons I have that in quotation marks is I think part of what we're going to want to deal with are some of the kinds of artificial separations and a lot of the confusion, etc., as to that connection between women and work. Because I think part of the problem is the very way in which we've conceptualized the problem, you know, the whole relationship between women and work. But that's something we'll want to get into a little bit as we're moving along. But in order to get into that topic, I thought it might be fun for the first few moments for us to do kind of a free association by completing the sentence or the phrase, women's work is. And that might help to get out into the circle some of the kinds of feelings, some of the connections, some of the connotations that we bring to a session with this particular title. So let's just do some throwing out of words, phrases, images, whatever comes to mind when you hear women's work is
in the home.
Never done.
Never ending. One at a time so we can catch these off.
Any work that women choose or are required to do.
Any work that women choose or are required to do.
A thankless job.
A thankless job. What, were there some comments here that I didn't catch?
Often rewarding.
Often rewarding?
Nurturing kind of jobs.
Underpaid?
Nurturing.
Nurturing? Other connotations of women's work?
Essential.
Essential?
Unrecognized.
Unrecognized?
Supportive.
Supportive.
Encompasses many different fields or many things.
Many different fields, so you can't
manage.
Many different roles, many different functions. Any other connotations or answers?
Child rearing.
Doesn't bring social security.
Doesn't bring social security. I have some statistics to back that up. Other things.
A thankless job.
A thankless job. Got a number with that kind of a ring to it.
Trivial.
Trivial. Surprise, there isn't more of a reaction when some of these responses are made. Any other things that you'd want to get on the table as we begin? Those of you who are just coming in, we began just doing some free association as to how people would fill in the blank, women's work is. And so we've got a number of different responses out on the table.
Generally low pay.
Well, I didn't hear the first part.
I said generally low.
Generally low paying. Right. I think you need that kind of response. Okay. In relationship to some of the other analyses and some of the theological connections that we've been making through the week, let me just identify why I think it's important for us to focus on, have a this evening or this session focused especially on women's work. First of all, I'm generally tonight going to be talking about women's work in its limited sense, i.e. in its employed outside the home kind of sense, although I'm glad that one of the first responses was that recognition that indeed much of the work that women do, all of the work that many women do is primarily in the home or that as the site of women's work. And it seems as though that's one of the real problems, is that we've had such a truncated view of work, so that work is only that which has a dollar sign attached to it. But the very lives of so many women are witness to the inadequacy of that way of valuing and treating and recognizing the significance of only work that is paid. Certainly, if we focus on the case of women in the employment world or the employed work, we discover that in the case of women, that's where a lot of the most blatant issues of injustice in the world of work occur. And by that I'm referring to some of the statistics that I would assume are fairly familiar to many people in this room. The fact that across the board, the average median income of women is, I don't know, something like 60 cents for every dollar that men earn. And that, you know, that fluctuates a little bit, but it really hasn't improved that much, even though there's lots of news articles about, you know, those women who made it to the top of these managerial positions or these professional positions, and therefore the media image is one that causes us to think, well, you know, the situation is really vastly improved for all women. But that's not quite the case. I think the fact that that's going to be a very, very hard nut to crack, that whole business of the inequities between the overall income that women earn compared to men, how difficult a nut that's going to be to crack, I think, is indicated by a lot of the static and resistance that begins to emerge as soon as issues like comparable worth legislation or policies begin to be discussed, namely that the jobs with similar kinds of training and experience, et cetera, would be paid similarly, rather than the enormous discrepancies that are often present and are more often than not linked to which sex is the predominant sex filling that job. You know, whether it's women who are primarily the workers who are the teachers of our young children, or whether it is, you know, men doing some heavy construction job or other kinds of jobs. So I think that whole arena of public discourse is just beginning to come into its own, and, you know, some areas of the country have gotten a bit further in that whole comparable worth kind of issue. But I think it's going to be a long kind of road before we can really talk about any real equity or even a bit more equity, as is the case in some other countries in the world. Just to give you an example of what some of these statistics look like, in 1983, and these figures, by the way, that I'm going to cite now would indicate that it's less than 60 cents for every dollar. According to these 1983 statistics, which are from Department of Commerce or Department of Labor, in other words, these are U.S. government figures, the median income for male workers aged 25 to 65 was $19,732. The median income for female workers of the same age range was $8,102. And therefore, the whole phenomena of the feminization of poverty, I think, is a very real kind of factor that we have to come to grips with. It's not just poverty becoming an increasingly female-centered problem among those who are unemployed, but even women who do work still find themselves, in more often than not, among the working poor.
Could you tell us if those statistics included the women that were not seeking employment? Housewives.
You mean the...
1983.
I'm talking about the income of those who were employed.
Okay.
So it's not... No, it's not factoring in those.
All full-time?
That's what I'm not sure of.
Because that'll make a huge difference.
Yeah. I think some of... Indeed, that might be factored in, and that's why I think overall the kind of rule of thumb of saying, well, about 60 cents per every dollar is a more accurate budget. I think this is, the discrepancy is bigger because of how many of these are not necessarily full-time, although I'm not, I don't think all the men necessarily are either.
No.
But probably more of the females. Another factor that I think indicates some of just the blatant issues of injustice that emerge when we look at women in the labor force, and these are 1980 figures, only 21% of women in the private labor force were covered by pensions. Only 21% of those employed in the private labor force were covered by pensions. And only 10% of retired women actually received pensions. Now, obviously, those who are at the retirement age were, you know, were coming out of an era where there was even less coverage than there is today. And those of you who were with us yesterday or were in the session with me yesterday when we talked about the three sectors of the labor market are aware that at that point we talked about how women and minorities are disproportionately concentrated in the secondary labor market, the low-paid, generally dead-end, no-benefit kinds of jobs, the fast food jobs, the discount department store clerk, the hospital workers, I'm not talking about nurses now, but a number of the service industry, the whole shift from manufacturing to service industry, and many of those service industry occupations being jobs that are disproportionately filled by women. So certainly just in terms of the economics, there are a lot of factors that I think need to be addressed. Also in terms of the social interaction of women in the workplace, and certainly the whole matter of sexual harassment, which has increasingly become a talked about issue in our society, and the many, many ways in which women become victims of sexual harassment of one kind or another. One of the other statistics that I've run across that I think is interesting is, you know, there's a lot of talk these days of, well, you know, if only we didn't have all these two career or where these couples were husband and wife or both working, and if, you know, we didn't have so many women entering the labor market, you know, then we'd have all these extra jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of maligning of those women who are working as well as their husbands. It's very interesting that in the period of 1975 to 1981, there indeed was an increase of married women who entered the job market. A 20% increase in married women who were employed, who entered the employment force during that six-year period of time, which is a rather significant increase. And yet at the same time, during that time period, the median family income declined by $2,700 in constant dollars. In other words, even though there were a lot of women entering the labor force, nevertheless, the overall picture in terms of family income in this country was a situation of declining income, at least if one looks at the constant dollars. In other words, if it's adjusted for inflation and all the rest. So there's that somewhat gloomy side of the picture. The other side of the picture that I think becomes the more challenging, well, the other side is challenging too in its own way, but the other side of the picture is that I think a lot of the kinds of problems connected with work that we've been discussing thus far during this week begin to, I think there are some openings, some possibilities to begin addressing those from out of the experience of women. And I think it is through women's experience that we might begin to find some of those openings for discovering how work in our society might be thought of in a more holistic kind of way, in a more humanizing kind of way, more humanizing for all involved, for women as well as for men. Because women have, since the emergence of, especially since the emergence of industrialization, been more identified with that arena that has been seen as separate from the arena of work, namely this tendency to separate home and family from work and the public world off here, we have to, I think, raise up the fact that what women have been doing all along, even when it's been confined mainly to home and family, has indeed been work. And work that is not paid or measured in dollar and cents ways, and work that has, for the most part, tended to be thought of as not as alienating and fragmented and all those other kinds of negative aspects of work as it's been structured in our economic system and as we've been talking about it this week. So I think it is that women's experience and the kinds of challenges, the kinds of issues, the kinds of needs that women are expressing when they enter the world of work need to inform, you know, that whole arena of how work is structured in our society. I don't think that the matter of who cares for the kids or how does one juggle home and family is just an issue of women. And yet, for the most part, those are issues that come to the fore when women enter the job market. At times, I like to think that some of those issues that women are raising in relationship to their work experience and the tension of trying to juggle it all, I keep thinking that men will start raising those same issues too. But once again, about a year ago when we were having a faculty retreat, the seminary faculty that I teach with, we were having this whole retreat and was focused on scholarly productivity. And we had various sessions focused on all different kinds of topics. And one session was to be on domestic concerns. And I thought, my goodness, my male colleagues are finally going to come to grips with the fact that, you know, some of us have been trying to juggle to domestic concerns all along. Well, lo and behold, as that session began, it quickly became apparent that they were, you know, concerned. Well, the other topics were all concerned about, oh, you know, this, you know, journal production, you know, producing articles for journals and this and that. Domestic concerns meant concerns of our institution as a seminary. And in no way were domestic concerns touched. And, you know, and I'm aware that most of my colleagues don't have that kind of juggling of childcare and all the other kinds of concerns that we juggle. And fortunately, there's a young male colleague who's joining us who he and his wife have a small baby, so I'm interested to see whether, with two of us on the faculty in that kind of position, whether those concerns will be taken that seriously. But I think a lot of the things that women, because of the basic necessities and survival issues that they're dealing with, bring to the fore are issues that indeed are needed to be dealt with to make not just life, but all of, not just work, but all of life more humanizing for all of us, whether we are male or female in the world of work. Let me just stop for a moment before I go on, see if there's some questions, responses to what I've been saying thus far. Anyone?
Well, that concerns me when you compare that 8,000 with 19,000. I mean, is that all different types of work that the men are doing and all different things?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's such a difference. I can't, it's hard for me to believe that it's that different.
Yeah. And yet, you know, we're talking, well, yeah, it's, it isn't the median, yeah, it is the median income. It's not just the average income, it's the median.
Yeah.
Barbara, does the same kind of statistic hold true, you know, around the 60% range for similar jobs? Is that what you're talking about? You talking about for
no? That's across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. What about for similar work?
I think it varies a lot. I don't remember those statistics. I mean, I think, it varies a lot. You'd have to talk about a given occupation or a given part of the labor sector, and there I would count on those of you who are involved in those particular occupations to have a better sense of what that might be than I would. You know, I know, for example, in the ordained ministry, there's some discrepancy, you know, but partly that's because of the number of women who are in part-time situations or whatever. It's, you know, so it gets cloaked under other factors, even though I think most bishops, at least in the Lutheran Church, will be somewhat insistent that a congregation not pay a pastor less simply because she is female. Nevertheless, there probably are a greater proportion of women serving small, struggling congregations who feel they, quote, can't afford a man. I know that's true in like Methodist and some other churches that have been ordained longer than we have.
What about education? Field of education.
How about some of you who are in there?
I don't know the figures, but I know that on college faculty that there's a significant difference in terms of what women faculty are making as opposed to men in the same categories of full professors.
Public education there, it's comparable. It's on the same scale, your male or female.
There's a complicating factor with universities in that women, but this, I think it's analogous with what happens in the larger work world, is women tend to move into fields which are paid less. So that you compare an English department with an engineering department, and the English will make considerably less than the engineering. And women, there are more women in the English department than there are in the engineering department.
Is that pay less because there are more women in the English field, or because of the field of English versus the field of engineering? Which is the cause?
Which causes? That's the issue.
I think some of those discrepancies have to do with what the person could make if they weren't teaching in the university. An engineer, someone on the engineering faculty would demand more in the marketplace, and so they get more, or some, a physician teaching a school of medicine but is paid more, someone in school of law is paid more than someone who's teaching in the English.
Whereas what an English teacher do?
Yeah, what else would
you weren't doing it?
Yeah, it is a market phenomenon, but on the other hand, when there is affirmative action in the university, they go to these departments to solve the problem. They don't try to get women engineers. What they do is they increase the number in English or in foreign languages or something like that, and then use that as a statistic.
Someone in the school of
overall.
School of Medicine would get more than the School of English. I mean, School of Medicine more than School of Nursing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is distraction or not, but one of the real major concerns that I have is that I think the most difficult work I ever did, I worked since I was 12, and pretty much was self-supporting. Paid my mother room and board when I was 16, paid my own dentist bill. The hardest work I ever did was raise children. And nobody gets paid for that except the daycare lady. And she gets about $2 an hour. And I am so troubled that we are giving that work away to others. And it's interesting, the daycare lady across the street basically had a nervous breakdown. Her husband is paying her $25 a week to work at home. To not go to work outside the home. But that major work, I feel, is so important. Even though I work part-time, I go to work at 9:30, so I'm still there in the morning, I'm still there at night, and I run. But who is going to do that important work? Because I am redoing the broken bonds that I had when I went to work part-time when my children were too young. And I feel like my career is worthless to me for what it has done for my ego when someone else had to deal with, you know, parenting my children too early. And somehow that has to become valuable work for men and women. Mm-hmm. When we had Ben thinking he was the flu, Fred stayed home from work on Mondays for a year so that we didn't have to put him in the daycare because that was the day I went to school. and that was real exciting. He took him to city council meetings, and it, you know, the mayor, you know, passed the baby around, and all the men held the baby, and this was all real different, you know, but it was wonderful for baby.
I'm just wondering, in your statistics, how many of the women who have chosen to work in jobs that are beneath them because they desire just what she desires, which is to be home part-time. Now, I qualify and have quite a bit of education, but still work in the home most of the time. Do a lot of volunteer work, but I generally am at home, and I have chosen to be there. And so I substitute teach occasionally, and so I would be one of those that would be feeding into that lower statistic because I choose not to earn as much. Mm-hmm. So sometimes those statistics can be slightly skewed for that reason.
One thing that was brought up in our church, there's been a financial budget crunch, and unfortunately, I'm kind of ashamed to have to say it, but I think it's interesting for everyone to hear that the school board wanted to solve the problem by paying those teachers who, mostly female, who were bringing in a second income to the family. They wanted to pay them thousands of dollars less than the people that were self-supporting, just because it was a second income for the family. And this is a church that is trying to work for some sort of social justice, and they have all kinds of chemical abuse outreach programs and all kinds of other things, but yet there was a significant core of the parish that didn't seem to value the putting Christian value, you know, teaching Christian values to their children, and some of us were quite scandalized when we heard that, and it was not passed. That happens there too.
Yeah, I think one of the overall tensions, and is part of where I want to go with this, you know, relates to what you were saying, but also to what you were saying, is how can some of the kinds of values, you know, of nurturance, etc., that women have traditionally represented, be valued in some new ways. You know, and yet, you know, that same argument can be brought up at some inopportune times when women say, hey, I do want, you know, to have a career or whatever. In other words, it's like, you know, getting your foot in the door, but also changing the shape of the room that you're trying to get into. In other words, trying to change that world of work, or at least the way in which work is valued, and yet living in a world where those, you know, that dollar cents pay for the work is not unimportant either, at least not for the vast majority of us.
I don't have any kind of hard facts, but it seems to me that a few years ago there was a lot more talk about job sharing, flexible hours, daycare, child care in the workplace, and that's, I'm just not hearing or reading about it like I was 5 to 7 years ago. It seems like there was more, at least talk, lip service, and I don't know if there was much implementation, but there was at least more discussion a few years ago, it seems to me, than there is now.
Do some of the rest of you share that impression?
Yes. I know two situations where it's in the nursing profession, where the hospitals are setting up programs to take care of the children of those mothers who are in the nursing field. And the other, in the one situation, the women are working just half time, and their children, when they are there, their children are in. So there's a job description, and there are two women working it, and they're giving it both, you know, a half day's work. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so they have the facility for caring for the children. And one of our recent early childhood educators at Purdue has gone into a hospital and is setting this up in Columbus, Indiana. So, but see, the job description is, you know, for this one job, but two people are sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two women work that out. So if there is a situation where that mother has to be home because of illness,
mm-hmm.
she's got a backup person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when women are hired, one of the reasons we, you know, get some of this flack is that we're maybe not as dependable, or we won't stay in it as long. And the training program and orientation and training, you know, for that particular job. A company puts in some monies. Mm-hmm. They'd like to, you know, have it pay off for them. Mm-hmm. So, those are two that I've just heard of just recently.
Other examples of that while we're on that subject?
I had just heard that this spring the House of Representatives have tried to offer a bill to give tax incentives for companies to sponsor daycare, and that fell through. It didn't pass, it didn't go through committee. So it's not even really much of an issue.
Right, and again, because of the very, well, not again, but one of the things I want to deal with next week are some thoughts about, you know, what's more adequate ethic toward of the family for our society. And I think it's a very narrow notion what family is, and some of the policies and values that really could undergird more healthy familial kinds of dynamics, you know, are just voted down. Over here, first.
In my profession, it was back when there was a supply shortage, the employer was quite willing to talk about job sharing and this sort of thing, but as soon as the supply met the demand, the employer is no longer willing to talk about this sort of thing because it's a hassle for them. It's cost them more bookkeeping.
That's right. You know, one of the very strange ironies that I think we, and I think we in the church especially need to name and deal with and find some ways to address, is that phrase, work and family, is seen as a relationship of mutual support and complementarity for men. You know, if the man has a wife and family, etc., you know, that's viewed as important. That kind of helps with his emotional support and all that sort of thing. And that's seen as an asset for him to have, you know, a wife and family, etc. But that very same phrase, work and family, when seen in relationship to women's experience, is more often than not seen as a liability. For one, it's an asset. And for the other, it's an asset. And I think as, you know, just a very basic kind of ethical principle for especially church folk to advocate and to strive for in our society is to take as the basic question, can work and family be as mutually supportive for women as work and family are for men? I don't really think that that's going to happen without some pretty significant changes, some pretty significant structural changes in terms of how the job market and family relationship to that are structured. But it seems as though if there's a central kind of social challenge that the church of all institutions should be able to rally its energy and get behind, it seems as though it would be that.
Out of 10 women in our office, there's 4 married women. The rest of them are single. These 4 women, each time that their family problems, they are the ones that have to leave early and go home. Now, if it's a family problem, shouldn't the husband say, I'll take care of the kids' problems and you don't have to worry about it? I mean, within their family relationship, the husband and wife has delegated that responsibility to the wife. And it makes this a lot different for us at work, too, when that lady leaves. You know, now that's not our fault. That's not the employer's fault. That's their. I've talked to them about that several times. Can't your husband take care of this? But in no case, they will do it. And so it's an added problem for the employer.
I know of a case in Chicago where husband and wife combination, where he was called a couple of years ago to a church on one side of Chicago, and she waited until this summer to finally get a call. And the main objection that was raised in her caller interview was this would be, oh, 15 miles across town, and she has two school-aged children. Well, what happens if the kids get sick? And she said, well, we figure it out. You know, Tom will be right there in the neighborhood where the kids are. The school can call him. Yeah. Oh, but won't they have to call you? You know, and so they were concerned that she would be too far away for the kids.
No, but Tom, in that case, Tom took the responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, they had to be very clear, saying.
In our case, the husband didn't take the responsibility.
But I think it's a broader. It isn't simply something that's worked out between husband and wife. Often the employer will not, if a man says, I need to go home because my child is sick, they say, oh, you don't take your work seriously, maybe you should look for work elsewhere. Or if a husband wants to get paternity leave, there are many, many fewer employers who will grant that.
That's right.
So that it's not just within the family unit that that's decided, but it's also a societal issue too.
And what I sense beneath what you're saying too is that the way that things get structured then end up treating men pretty unjustly too, in
sure.
terms of a man cannot be freed to tend to certain load because of the connotations attached to those jobs where men have tended to be the predominant employees, namely that he will be so dedicated to that company that family doesn't interfere, only becomes an asset, not a liability.
Yeah, suddenly being married, the work and family, which was an asset, then can become a liability for the man, too.
Don't you think what we're talking about here basically is greed? Because it costs the company more to hire two people for the same job, fringe benefits, retirement, all that. It costs them more to provide daycare centers, and it costs them more to give paternity and ignore them. Isn't that really what the bottom line is?
I'll let others answer. I would tend to feel that you're onto how we then deal with that, if that's the...
I'd like to ask a question about unions. Are women better off with unions, or unions ahead of, say, the church or society generally? Have unions made progress in this area? Mm-hmm. I have the feeling that there are not many union members here. Mm-hmm.
Anyone want to respond to that?
I know that with the UAW, a colleague of mine has studied women in UAW until very recently, that is within the last decade, women were badly discriminated against. I mean, they were brought in during the World War II, Rosie the Riveter, and then they were all kicked out and lost all seniority rights and were simply told that now that the boys were coming back, they had to leave.
What happened in this last decade?
Well, see, part of the difficulty is we're talking about such a disproportionate number of women in the secondary labor market that is basically a non-unionized job sector. And so, you know, certainly there are unions who are in some service sector jobs, but, you know, union, as I was saying yesterday, unionized jobs constitute, I think now, only about 16% of the jobs in this country. So it's
But the question is whether unions are more concerned about these issues or doing anything.
I think it's a mixed.
Depends on the
union, yeah. Over there.
Yes.
Okay.
I would like to speak to that. I'm from the state of Minnesota, and our public employees union there has made great strides. We have pay equity for women. We have job sharing, which this one lady was talking about, where two women can share a job, and they split up the benefits and so forth, so that between the two of them, they work it out. It's counted as one job. And
they get comparable benefits for whatever portion they're working.
Yeah, it's a split job is what it is, but it's counted as one job. Mm-hmm. And the women can choose if this is their choice, not the employer's. Mm-hmm. And that is the way our contract reads. What were some of the other comments made? We have a terrific union, and I just would like you to...
What kind of jobs are we talking about?
This is service jobs, because where I work is in the Regional Treatment Center at Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and that is the old name used to be the Fergus Falls State Hospital. We have changed the name to a Regional Treatment Center because our hope is to expand beyond what we have now, which is mentally retarded, chemically dependent, and mentally ill residents. We have those three disciplines. And we're hoping to expand further and be able to do more things in a regional area of the state. But we've made great strides, and I know the state of Washington did pass a pay equity bill, but they never appropriated the money for it. And the state of Minnesota did appropriate it, and in the service jobs, we have what we call a human services technician and the technician senior, et cetera. These are people who work directly with the residents. And those jobs were basically considered female or women's jobs, so that the men who worked in those jobs also were paid less. And how the pay equity worked was any classification where there were 70% female dominated among the employees received this pay equity. And I want to tell you, it was a big pump. And so we're very proud of what we've accomplished, and that has been the union that worked on it.
The state of Washington did, first of all, there was a comparable work, but they're implementing it too.
They are now.
Yeah.
But when we had a convention about 4 years ago, I talked to some of the union people from Washington, and they were just terribly depressed because they had worked so hard to get this passed, but they didn't get the appropriation of the money. And you know that any bill that's passed by your state or anybody, any government that doesn't appropriate money, that's as good as not even having it. So Minnesota beat them. Washington was first. Minnesota beat them getting the... Would you like me to say no?
I wanted to talk about a little bit different version of the union. I basically work in heavy industry. I'm not part of the union, but I work with it all the time. And I think as far as pay in this industry, it's pulp and paper industry, you're paid by the job, so it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, you're paid by the job. But the trick is that the whole system is built on seniority, and the average employment time is like 30 years. So unless you went into the workforce 30 years ago, you're not getting paid what the people that have been there for a long time. We went through a period of cutbacks in numbers of employees. So the very junior people are the ones that are cut back. What few women that were in the industry were much more at risk than at the men because of the years that they've been in it. And I kind of see a parallel in business too. It's like it might take you 15 or 20 years to become a manager. Even if you're a white, male, Caucasian, the whole business. So if you're starting now as a woman, and if you go, even if you have the same breaks, it might take you 20 years to get to where that man is today. Mm-hmm. Because of kind of the building seniority system.
Yeah, I've seen studies recently about women who received their MBAs from places like Harvard 10, 20 years ago, and how many more of them have dropped out of the world of business than have their male colleagues. For a number of reasons. Some to get married and have kids or whatever, and deciding that was something that they wanted also. But others just saying, hey, that's such a dog-eat-dog world, I don't want to have any part of it. So, for a variety of reasons. But I think the other thing that your comment points to that I think is so important is we can read some of these justice issues on the surface and say, oh, well, look at it, she just hasn't done this or that or whatever, and without realizing all the other societal factors that are impinging on her life and putting her in a pretty vicious kind of situation there.
I'd like to just elaborate slightly that this points to a societal problem. The seniority system, which works in a large number of areas, including academics, works against women or the few men who would like to take a leave of absence to or stop the career long enough to raise children or begin raising children. They immediately lose that seniority and have to start over again. And generally, most careers involve, if you're an academic, you can't say, I'm going to stop for 6 years and not publish anything, until Johnny and Mary has reached a certain age, and then suddenly I'm going to be back and it won't work. It's just not. And so it means structurally, the deck is stacked against strong commitment to family.
Mm-hmm.
in the home work.
Sarah, somebody back here trying.
I work for a major American corporation, and I started about 4 years ago. The split between male and female entry-level positions was probably 60-40 women to men. And at the position I'm in now, there are almost no women above me. And there are very few women that I started with still there. And we, you know, when I first started out, I always wondered if there would be all this kind of blatant discrimination going on in the company, and you said, oh, there's no female vice presidents, and we're gonna, you know, get in there and change everything. And something happens, you know, after a few years. I don't know exactly, you know, each of the women that I knew that I started with left for different reasons at different times, but there's just something in the environment, whether it's, you know, the way, some of it's the way the women feel about themselves and their ability to, you know, to just go in there and fight for the next 20 years to get to be a vice president. And in some cases, it's very subtle discrimination where you just know that the opportunities aren't going to be there for you or whatever. But, and, you know, it gets real lonely, too, in the process. There's no one out there to model yourself after.
No.
And, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, I think what happens in a lot of cases is women will say, a lot of women that I know that I started with say things like, you know, it would be easier to drop out and go back and go back into academia. You know, that's got to be easier. And I don't know if it is. You know, I don't know how well they're doing when they drop out and jump back into that. But you know, we could never find any blatant discrimination going on. Because there's no place where, you know, you say, I had the same qualifications as that guy, but you gave me promotion. You know?
It's far more subtle.
It's something that kind of gets internalized over time. You start to feel about yourself that you're not quite as good, and so you don't want to face the challenge anymore. You just kind of want to drop out.
Yeah, and I think that's the real... real tragedy, and where I think we've really missed the boat, because it's like, well, if someone doesn't quite fit with that, rather than saying, hey, is there something about the way in which this whole thing is structured
and
need to look at, or is it just that somehow I'm not
appropriate for the task? If you're kind of all alone there, you know, like I am now, there's really no one to figure it out with either, because you just don't walk into, you know, a group of men that I work with and say, is there something going on here that, you know, I need So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to see that. So you start to feel as though it's you and not the company in general.
Right. No, I think that's a very important kind of thing. And it certainly points to the need for women in positions like yours to find ways of networking with other women who might be in other companies or whatever. Because I think as, you know, being one of the first women ordained in the Lutheran Church, I know that our experience there of saying, hey, how crucial that was to reach out. And the women now don't feel quite the same need, but it's, I think, a very crucial thing just to keep your sanity.
Yeah, they'll do things a little more blatantly occasionally, like tell you that they think that because the position that you're in or the task that's at hand is dealing with a lot of men, that it would be easier to have them, you know, it would be better for the company to be represented by having a man in that position. Because not anything against you, Mary, but, you know, what will these men think of?
You just don't quite have the right equipment.
But it's, you know, it's nothing against you. We just want to bring another, you know, old boy out to deal with this.
This has been interesting, and I had a hunch that once we got into this topic, we'd have, you know, in a sense, you're saying everything I wanted to say and more, and with a lot more lived experience behind that. One of the things in that relates to some of the comments that have been made that I wanted to mention is that part of what has happened with a lot of these functions that we've traditionally associated with women and expected women to uphold in society is that, especially in recent years, many of those tasks have entered the economy. And so we have this whole proliferation of a lot of service sector kinds of jobs. You know, a lot of fast food kinds of jobs, you know, the whole proliferation of jobs in that area. A lot of the commodification of that work that has in the past gone on in the home, you know, whether it's childcare or restaurants or caretakers of one kind or another, a big part of what's happened is that a lot of those things traditionally associated with women have now been fed into the labor market, and yet when we look into that sector of the labor market, we discover who is still there doing it. I mean, it still is more often than not women. So I think that's the kind of phenomena that we have to be aware of. I think one of the, and this relates to the whole media kind of phenomena I was describing in the beginning, we have a lot of articles about, you know, these professional or managerial women who have made it to the top, or some women who have entered male predominant trades, have moved maybe from a so-called pink collar job to a blue collar job or whatever, and therefore broken out of some of these female ghettoized kinds of jobs. Yet I think we have to avoid the temptation to see that as indicative of the whole picture. The rapidly increasing employment of women in the past two decades, has been mostly in the clerical and service sector jobs. In other words, those jobs more typically associated with women. So that therefore the typical working woman is a woman employed in what basically could be thought of as a working class kind of job. And so the kind of image of all these women who have, quote, made it is not indicative of what the situation is for the vast majority of women who are employed these days. I wanted then to just conclude with a few comments as to how women view their work. Because I think a lot of times there's all kinds of assumptions that we make for one another, that we as women might make for other women, that men might make for women, or whatever. Oftentimes, that whole notion of women's employment as positive is based on data that comes from something like the professional two-career family. The woman is employed, finding fulfillment, finding meaning there. Maybe working for financial necessity, but not always, even though I would insist that the vast majority of women are working because it's financially necessary, not just because it's a neat kind of thing to do. But in the case of a lot of women, that financial necessity is indeed the predominant kind of factor. And yet, some women scholars, some women labor historians in recent years have begun to do some work on looking at how women experience their work. And they find that even among working class women who took that job because they clearly had to, because they were the single wage earner for the family, or because, you know, hey, the family just can't make it financially without two incomes, even for those women, one can't say they're working simply because of necessity, but being involved in the work world develops its own appeal, etc., too. And so therefore, many are working and continue to work and find some value in that, in addition to the financial necessity. So without pursuing this any further, seeing the bell has rung, I think we need to be far more nuanced than we often have or than our society has been as to why it is that women work and how do they feel about their work, and not too quickly draw any generalizations as to how that fits for people. Thank you for all your feedback.